You are Locked On Cavaliers, your daily podcast on the Cleveland Cavaliers, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello and welcome to the Locked On Cavaliers podcast, your daily look at LeBron James and the rest of the always interesting Cleveland Cavaliers. I'm Chris Manning, your host and the site manager at SB Nation's Fear the Sword. On today's show, I am joined by two guests, a little three-person weave action. First up, Ashley Bastock from NEOSportsInsiders.com is here, as well as Swish Appeal and AmicoHoops.net. Ashley, how are you?
I'm great. I have a lot of places I write for, so I apologize and commend you in doing that in one
breath. Look, I got the mouthful out. I didn't read it fully before I did, even though I have a script. And Spencer Davies from Basketball Insider. Spencer, what's going on?
Nothing. Thanks for having me on.
So we are at Quicklands Arena. If you hear people tearing stuff down, that is what you hear. We are in Quicklands Arena after the Cavs played the Denver Nuggets. They lost this game 126 to 117, a game in which there was no Jeff Green. He was a late scratch. We'll talk about that later. Larry Nance said will probably be the dunk of the Cavs season and murdering Mason Plumlee. LeBron James, another triple-double, I believe his 12th of the season, and all starters in double figures, but the Cavs do lose this game. And we're going to run through some of the key points here. But first up, the bad defense. This was a game where the Denver Nuggets shot over 50% from the field and over 50% from three. Ashley, we'll start with you. What stood out to you in how the Cavs defended the three-pointers with guys like Will Barton, guys like Gary Harris showing out?
Well, I mean, it definitely hurts when you have a guy and, you know, guys coming off the bench that are able to kind of do and maintain what the starters have been doing. And, you know, I know you're going to play an audio clip, but Ty talked about it. The players talked about it. What really hurt them is making these adjustments in blitzing on defense, which we know the Cavs like to do on ball screens, where they send that second defender up and basically trap no matter the situation. And as Larry Nance Jr. put it post-game, where that really hurts them is when you have a team like the Nuggets where you also have to respect their interior game. So then you've got guys kind of scrambling to get back out there for that blitz because they have to defend the interior. Otherwise, a guy like Jokic is just going to kill you. So really, I think that the Cavs just once again, and we've seen it repeatedly throughout the season, just have not been able to make the right adjustments and be able to take advantage of it.
Denver team that has a very good system, too. They move the ball well. Yeah. They have guys that know what they're doing, and they execute well. Spencer, Ty Lue talked about it after the game, and the players have said this before, that it's teams are making shots against them. They've said this before when they had different personnel, but it's a similar logic line from them, and I understand why they say it, but do you buy it? Do you buy like that this is just these teams are making shots on them?
It seems like it sometimes, I'll tell you that much. I think to your point about the Nuggets offensive system, this is something I tweeted earlier in the game. It's not that two things are one thing can be exclusive to the other. The Cavs have a very poor defense, but the Nuggets also have a very potent offensive game. They've got so many weapons, guys like Gary Harris and Nikola Jokic. And, I mean, Will Barton came off the bench and almost put up a triple-double. Jamal Murray is one of their like most prolific scorers, and he only had 16 tonight. Jokic played more of the point guard role tonight, but he can score and go off in certain games. They're just bringing Paul Millsap back into the mix, so they're a very good team. Despite where their standing is in the West, I know it's really crowded out there right now. But I just think that with the Cavs, they just got confused a lot. You know, a lot of people are talking about how it's effort. I think it's more or less, they're just confused. George Hill said this after the game, that there's four new guys coming in here from three different systems, and they're trying to implement the defensive schemes with those guys, and the other guys are trying to learn to play with the new guys. So it's just kind of all like the perfect storm right now. And it's kind of hard for them to adjust to it. And, I mean, it's still only eight games in. But at the same time, you don't have much time to, you know, bitch and moan about it, you know?
Yeah. I think a couple points of context here. The Nuggets came into this game with this league's sixth-best offense at 108.8 points per 100 possessions. That's really good. The Cavs, for context, are at fifth, 1.1 points better on the season. They're very good offense. Jokic is an incredible player. But in this game, the Nuggets had 130.2 defensive rating or offensive rating per cleaning the glass. The Cavs are good in their own run in offense, an offensive rating of 121.9. They're going to have a bad defense. The Cavs did well, but I think there's something to be said that you have guys like Gary Harris he's just getting open looks. They lost him a little bit at times. LeBron, I think, had a bad defensive game. Murray was still 3 of 4. Jokic, you know, has the 8 assists. He's picking all the spots. This Cavs is a bad defensive team. I think, like, they miss one guy who's just going to go out there and chase the shooters around and know what they're going to do. It's so telling that Larry Nance can just do basic defensive things, and it matters a lot.
He bodies up a lot better. I mean, you can even just look at the last time when he was defending Embiid for the majority of the game before he got gassed down the stretch. He was really bodying up Embiid and stuff like that.
I mean, you have stuff like J.R. Smith this game getting beat on from the corner on a Will Barton cut. It's like just bad defense.
And I guess the frustrating part in watching this, obviously these guys haven't been together that long, just to put things in context. When you look at the end of the regular season, they're still not going to have been together that long.
Plus incorporating Kevin Love back into all of
this. Right, into all of this. But I think the frustrating thing is when you looked at these four new guys that came in, the big thing was the athleticism and being able to push and run in transition on offense and in defense. And sometimes that stuff is still falling by the wayside. I think the hope was and still is that they were going to kind of pull everyone else that was left on this team after the trade deadline up to their level. And instead, I think in some instances, they're being brought down to the level that this team has kind of been playing at, especially in defensive transition all year.
Yeah.
And I think we're kind of seeing a lot of some of the same issues, especially in that transition defense and, you know, just being lazy to match up, being lazy on closeouts that, you know, has really been the crux of this team's issues on the defensive side of the ball for the entire season.
So it's contagious on the negative side of things. That's an interesting way to put it.
I think from LeBron on down, like, LeBron's great, has another triple-double,
but
you can just see him, like, not closing out on guys.
Right.
And you can just see the places in the playoffs you would think he's going to hit that other level because it actually matters.
That first quarter, I'll tell you, it just looked like Paul Millsap was just beating him on every cut. And like, it looked like he got beat a couple times. LeBron, I'm speaking about, was getting beat a couple times. Even in transition, sometimes he wouldn't get back down in defense.
And
I know that, you know, he's LeBron James, but at the same time, you got to have effort for 48 minutes, as he likes to put it.
And defense matters the most.
Yes, defense.
I mean, you have to set the tone if you're LeBron. Definitely, that's going to be probably realistically your role until you retire. Like, it's because you're one of the greatest to ever play the game. But at the same time, he gets kind of lazy doing some of these things. But he is, like, probably the only guy on this team that can get away with that, right? Like, these other guys can't get away with that. They need to actually put that effort in and fill in those gaps where, you know, we're just not seeing that right now, but that's what kind of needs to be done.
You wonder how much it is JR just being a step slow just because he's getting older, maybe.
I think him and Tristan, and we'll move on and talk about LeBron here, but I think both those guys, you can see the wear and tear from the finals runs. I think that's a pet theory I have, that they're you don't see it with LeBron because he's a superhuman.
He's a freak of nature.
The Versaclimber, like, gets him ready to go for all of this.
Right.
Speaking of LeBron, triple-double, the weird defensive moments. What did you guys make of his night? I mean, this to me was like, other players, I would say this was like a great performance. This was like a very average LeBron night from what we've seen.
I was just going to say it was a ho-hum LeBron performance, which, poor us, that we got to witness, you know, another
25, ho-hum. 15, and 10.
Yeah, right. And, you know, I've had conversations with so many people about, I think, what LeBron does, and especially when you look at him in the MVP race, it really gets lost on so many people. And he's so consistently good that we look at a night like this and are like, yeah, you know, whatever. If nobody's really fawning over it unless he puts up 40 or 50 plus points, and then, you know, we all kind of freak out. But yeah, it's, you know, you hate to say it, but to put it in the perspective of everything he's done, you know, this season, let alone
last
his career,
month where he just had a
where he averaged
a triple double, oldest player to ever do it.
It's, you know, it kind of becomes like that, and it kind, you know, it's in some ways it's not fair to him almost that we can kind of get almost complacent as fans or the media with what he does.
Is it wrong that I think that more of these ho-hum LeBron performances, offensively at least, you know, being the maestro, not being as aggressive, I view as more beneficial to the Cavs?
I mean,
because when he's coming out and doing these 40-point performances, these 37-point performances, whatever you want to call it, and the next guy has 12, as opposed to what the Cavs had tonight, they had seven people in double figures, had everyone getting involved. It looked like most of the, you know, the secondary guys and tertiary guys were hitting their shots tonight. Specifically, George Hill, he had 17 tonight. You know, JR came alive in the second half. I think that when those guys are involved more, and LeBron seeing them, and then he can take over in the fourth. I think those games are a lot better than the ones where LeBron just goes completely off, because that means that he's taking it upon himself completely rather than, you know, kind of piecing it together, which I think is a lot more beneficial to the Cavs if they do what they did tonight, have a balance.
Yeah, the 15 assists for LeBron were obviously the high point of it. I think this game also probably looks differently if he's not 8 of 19. He had just a couple weird non-LeBron misses, like non-LeBron-like misses. And he also had that lob to Tristan where he, I think, hit it off the glass instead of, it just wasn't properly placed for Tristan. And these are just things he normally doesn't do.
Yeah.
So if LeBron plays maybe to that upper echelon that we've seen him do, this game doesn't matter.
And he'll hit 1-3 tonight.
Yeah, I mean, his three-point shot, his three-point shot's going to certainly fluctuate a little bit more.
Right.
And I mean, but you're right. Like, Jetty Osman had a really good offensive night. Still had the pick some tacky fouls and didn't play much in the second half, but shot well. Tristan Thompson had a good offensive night and maybe didn't rebound quite as much, but had some good rim runs, and LeBron set him up well. And that stuff does matter. I think you're right about LeBron feeding into those guys. For LeBron, did anything that he said post-game stand out to you? Anything that he said about the team stand out to you guys?
Just kind of get a stop at the end, pretty much. I mean, they climbed all the way back. Thought they had the defensive stop when George Hill pulled out the chair on Wilson Chandler, got called for a foul. Not much you can do there. I asked him about how the last two games, the one against Philadelphia where Rodney Hood missed two very open, not open shots, but good looks late in the game from that left elbow. Similar shot again tonight for Rodney that he missed, so he's 0-3 in those situations. Does it come down to, you know, making a miss in those? And he pretty much agreed with it. George Hill missed one from the corner. He missed a couple good looks, he even said. So at the end of the day, you're just going to have to make those in the clutch situations in order to get over the hump.
Yeah, you know, kind of just being bringing up the point that if you get down one, you have to find a way to get a stop. And, you know, he even referenced that George Hill play where he kind of took the seat out from under him a little bit. And, George Hill got called for the foul. But
and then Hill later, when it was, I think, a four-point game, just missed a little, dropped a LeBron pass as it go out of bounds, and that cost him as well.
And he kind of talked, you know, hit on those missed opportunities, some, you know, a couple of shots that JR had at the end that just didn't fall. I think that's kind of what this is hinging on. But, you know, we kind of all know LeBron's so diplomatic in his post-game answers that nothing really – people try to read the tea leaves all the time, but –
he's pretty straightforward.
Yeah, he's straightforward. He's diplomatic. Yeah, it's nothing too shocking that is going to...
And this wasn't angry LeBron.
No.
He hasn't been angry LeBron for quite a while.
No, he's not quite...
Since the trade deadline.
He's not as jovial as, you know, as he was in Boston when he was celebrating on the bench openly.
Right.
But, yeah. We'll wrap it up on the first part of the podcast on that. We're going to take a quick break. We'll come back, hear about everything else going on with the Cavs. Larry Nance, J.R. Smith, Jeff Green, all of that and more.
Questions?
What made him so difficult on the front tonight? So many shooters. You know, with Harris and Murray making shots like the way they were tonight, and Barton as well. You know, it was just tough. You know, they were making us pay for every mistake we made tonight.
Something happened to your ankle, second half?
I think it was Gary Harris ran past me and totally accidental. Just kind of ran in my knee a little bit, hyperextended, but it's fine. I was ready to go back in. Just needed to come out. Like, I'm all right? Okay, good. Let's go. And Coach Lou decided to stay with the guys that were in, but I was ready to go.
That first half, you were on fire. Did you had to enjoy that?
It was fun. Yeah, it was definitely fun. Yeah, I was just, they were leaving me open. So I had to do what they were doing and just kind of make them pay for it.
That one on Plumlee, you take special pride in one of those?
I mean, that's definitely, that's kind of what I've been doing since I got in the league, you know, what I enjoy doing. So, yeah, that'll be one that I'll look at a couple times.
Any other questions?
On defense, did you guys simplify? Or was it just offense?
It was mainly offense. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, we put up, 114 or something like that tonight. So our offense was solid. We just got to get stops. It was all defensive tonight.
Larry, you knew they got shooters out there, but why were they closed out so long? I know there were some loose balls, and they were able to swing the ball and what have you. What do you think broke down? Why were the closed out so long? Like, it seemed like you guys were in bad situations where they would swing the ball and they did an open look in the corner.
Well, the way they spread the ball and the way they, you know, they got those shooters, but they've also got, you know, two great passers in Millsap and Jokic. So, you know, when those guys start backing down, they're so good in the post that, you know, you guys in the perimeter have to respect that and have to respect their post game, therefore leaving, you know, the shooters. You've got to got to kind of live with something, you know. So tonight, whether they were open or contested, their shots were just falling tonight.
Yeah.
Don't you guys cut it to one there in the fourth? Why can you get over that?
We're still trying to figure that out right now. You know, I feel like, you know, the effort was there. We just couldn't get a stop when we really needed to. They had a lot of guys who hit some big shots, you know, down the stretch. And you got to learn from it, watch film, and try to figure out how we can get better.
The four new guys that they brought in, you by far have been through the most playoff battles and gotten there. Are you concerned at all with what you've seen here now that you're 8 games in and, you know, you're 4-4?
No. You know, I don't expect us to be 8-0 right now. I feel like early we was on a high horse, you know, new to the city and new to the team. So you're kind of on cloud nine to get away from your old stepping grounds, things like that. But once teams start scouting and figuring things out, you know, we just got to figure it out ourselves and, you know, where we're going as a team and, you know, what's going to be our identity. And, you know, it's all new schemes for us defensively for four guys coming into a rotation to play with a playoff team like this. This is totally different. So it's going to take time. There's no need for us to tip our head down, and we got to keep our head high and figure it out.
The way you were stepping into threes tonight, is that an example of what Ty's been preaching about, just having you guys be aggressive and look for your shots from the
net? I mean, definitely. So I think I've missed so many threes since I've been here that's probably rimmed in and out that I've normally been making. So, you know, it's good to finally see a couple drop. And like I said, you know, Lou and all the other guys here, you know, keep preaching for me to just stay aggressive and keep shooting it, because eventually they fall.
George, what do you think it is that's keeping the defense from coming along?
I mean, we're not all, you know, familiar with everything yet. You know, it's like I said, you're bringing four new guys that had four different type of defensive schemes where they came from. So it's not something that you're just going to plug in the right way and figure it out. So we're learning. It's hard when you really don't have practice time. You know, we're playing every other day. But, you know, we're doing the best we can watching film, and the days that we do have practice, locking down and locking into it and trying to figure it out.
And we're back. You just heard from Larry Nance, his post-game scrum. Larry Nance had the highlight of this game. The dunk that he threw down on Mason Plumlee brought the cue down. Disorienting, I think, for even us on that were in media row. Just got way up there. Literally, Mason Plumlee he's dead now.
I don't know if the Plumlee family name even exists anymore.
If this was Game of Thrones, like, he just, like, conquered them, and this was his Red Wedding.
In one gif, describe your reaction to that.
Weebe from The Wire just looking shocked and, like, looking around because I just didn't know what to
do. See, mine was, without my phone in hand, of course, or a video or camera recording device, was Shaq at Vince Carter 2000 dunk contest with just his ooh.
Yeah. It's a good one.
It's crazy.
What do you guys think of Nance's night? 14 points, 8 rebounds, was in the game when they made that big comeback, coming back from 15 to get within one before it kind of fell apart. Leaves the game late. It looks like it was just an ankle issue.
Hyperextended knee.
Yes, they maybe banged knees with, I think, Gary Harris in the game as well. Said he could have gone back in. And maybe the adrenaline's up for him. We want to kind of see how he maybe looks Monday against Detroit. But let's start with Ashley. What did you think of Larry Nance's night?
I mean, I thought that first half was great. He ended the first half with 14 points and 5 rebounds, doing exactly what I envisioned him doing when they traded for him. And Chris and I were talking during the game that he was the guy, I think, that I was most excited about, sort of knowing that when guys like George Hill, Rodney Hood, Jordan Clarkson, who are maybe used to scoring and setting themselves up for shots, it's kind of hit or miss with how guys like that adjust to playing with LeBron. But I kind of always viewed Larry Nance as a guy who knew his role, knows what he's good at, what he's supposed to do to be successful, and he really just cares about getting a win at the end of the day. And tonight, you know, him scoring and being able, starting, I think, 4 of 4 from the field or whatever it was when he came in there at the end of the first quarter. That's really what, you're not going to get that from him necessarily every night, but when he's able to give you that, it's obviously a huge plus, and that energy, as Ty Lue said, post-game, becomes kind of contagious for everyone else.
I think his athleticism is just kind of like Anderson Varejao on steroids. Just like, you know, he's just the energizer bunny.
He like, just, he, it's not way. It's not try hard effort. Yeah. It's like this guy is he's so I haven't really been able to quantify this until now, but like I think like him and Tristan both just have something that like matters. Like I know people and I don't know how you guys feel about this. Like want Nance to start and are just trying to bury Tristan. And I get it. Like I think he's gonna fit really well with Kevin Love, but his ability to dribble the ball up the floor
is huge.
It makes the Cavs faster just naturally.
The coast to coast with the statue.
Yeah. Yes.
Even before the Plumlee dunk. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I mean, I kind of am right now of the mindset that it helps to have him in when LeBron gets that, you know, his first break of the game maybe, and being able to do some of that pushing that LeBron, you know, tends to take over when he's in the game, kind of are able to utilize Larry more in that way.
And I wonder how, if he's, I think him and Love in that situation makes a lot of sense. I'm just saying Larry Nance is as Kevin Love's bench wide out. Running up the floor, Kevin Love throwing outlet passes.
That's like almost unstoppable. Like I'm trying to think who would be able to defend against
there are
that.
I think teams would like mark it, but it's like how many guys are. I mean, just how many? It's really in off transition. LeBron, like they're so good at catching teams off guard.
Send him on a fly route.
Yeah, I mean, if he just gets down the floor, that's a big thing. His energy, I think, is very just contagious. I think, you know, like I don't love what Jordan Clarkson does every night. I think Hood's been very up and down, but I think Ash, you're right. I think Nance has been the guy that out of the new guys, with especially with Hill struggling from three certain games and having some turnovers, I think he's been the best guy, and he's been at least the most exciting. And that dunk is a reason why. But I think everything he does has been really, really useful.
Yeah, probably the most consistent out of them. And like Ashley said, it's about, you know, not having to adjust to play with LeBron because, I mean, his role isn't to be a primary scorer. It's to be the cleanup guy. It's to be the guy who, you know, provides the spark, which is why I don't necessarily know if you should start him. But Ty Lue's been, you know, closing games with him. And the only reason he didn't close tonight was because of the injury.
I think Mike Zavgano's tweeted about this.
Plenty of times.
Yeah. And he's like a little, like, and I think he's right, ultimately. But I think one reason that if you're going to close with Nance, I think maybe not having him play 12, 16 minutes, 10 minutes a row, you need to break that up somehow. I think to, like, looking at JR in this game, I don't know who I would have subbed in for him. He needed a 3-minute breather to just get, he looked gassed at the end of that game.
Yeah.
Speaking of JR, 19 points in the second half. Back from his one-game suspension for throwing soup at Damon Jones. No shots in the first half.
0-0 in the first half with two rebounds.
Yeah, not a good defensive performance from him, I would say. Like, he struggled with he put in some more effort once his shot got going. Spencer, what did you make of JR? Like, why do you think JR just got it going in the second half? Like, is there something in you that just seemed to click with him in the second half that pushed him forward?
Well, his exact words were, the hell with it. That's exactly what he said.
So, he said that, I don't remember what game it was.
He said that multiple times.
That's like a theme for him, is that when he says, hell with it, I'm just going to be me, he plays better. And I don't know, he's not a guy that's going to open up to us in situations and tell you what's going on in his brain necessarily, but it seems like when he feels free like that, JR's better.
I think it's been really tough for JR this year, and I know, like what we were saying earlier, is that maybe he's lost a step because, you know, he's getting older, but there's also been so much adjusting for him. You know, he starts out the season thinking he's going to start, then Dwayne Wade comes in. Dwayne Wade is asking to be on the bench after two games. Then he comes back into the starting lineup, and then, you know, JR goes through, like, all of this different kind of turnover and all of these different rotations, and I think it messes with his mind a little bit. But, yeah, he's definitely not the same guy as he was defensively in 2016. Ty is extremely loyal to his guys, JR and Tristan especially. They've been in the starting lineup for a long time.
I mean, and he rode JR when JR got hot tonight.
He did.
He kept JR in.
Yeah, but for example, in the Philadelphia game, he rode, you know, in the Brooklyn game, he rode Rodney Hood down the stretch, you know, so.
That's what he does. That's Ty Lue's Doc Rivers influence. Ride the hot guy, get it going.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, what was better? J.R. Smith. I can't talk. It's late and I can't talk.
Jeff Smith.
The combination of Jeff Green and J.R.
A player no one
Twitter
needs.
Would hate that
a player. Yeah,
Twitter
player.
Would absolutely
yeah.
hate that.
I'm like repulsed at the idea of that. What was better? J.R. Smith shrugging after he hit that three, or the bowling move he had in the first half when he threw the ball to the ref?
Well, I was really impressed by that just based on my own inability to bowl. Like, I was trying to figure out the physics of that, and, like, I at one point played basketball. I could never even come close to what he did. I'm always you know, pretty obsessed with a good JR shrug moment, something that we can make into a GIF that I can use for like the next 5 years.
We got squinty eye JR.
Yeah, we got squinty eye JR, so you guys can have a fresh picture to make the memes with, which is always, you know, always a positive. But you know, it kind of always goes back to what we were talking about before with him. This kind of devil may care attitude that comes about every so often with him when he plays his best, that's been the story since he's been here. You know, the first year here, he was, you know, when in doubt, shoot became the motto. GV Artwork made a t-shirt out of it. And we've seen him, as Spencer said, struggle this year. And when he talks about doing that, he has a great game. And, you know, I think I asked him a few weeks ago, like, is that attitude here to stay? And he said, I think so. Clearly it hasn't been. I don't know what you do to kind of get that attitude here to stay. It's kind of hard on this team, given everything that they've been through together in the last 3 years. When you've been to the last three finals, you can't, as a player, I guess, have that sort of attitude all the time. Even though in his case, it might be better if he did, for everybody.
Well, and they're incorporating Rodney Hood, who still have Kyle Korver, who only played 7 minutes in this game.
Yeah.
Jeff Green gets minutes. Jetty Osman is, I think, you know, earned minutes that I think eat into some of what JR is doing, for better or for worse. And he hasn't played well. Last year, and I think last year, you could look at the contract issue, the his health and his daughter as being these reasons. This year, it's not quite as obvious.
And I think that there's an abundance on this roster of guys who are better playing off ball, you know, with the ball in their hands. And then there's another, you know, situation where guys that have a ball in their hands are better playing as shooters, you know, and there's some kind of mix up there. You know, Jeff Green, I think, is the prime example of that.
Jeff Green and Jordan Clarkson are black holes. They have moments where they're good. Clarkson hits big threes, it seems like, every night. But he's also a black hole.
Yeah, and the difference is here with Clarkson, though, is if you use him as a spot-up shooter, it's been working so far.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe he just needs to take that one a little bit more. But I agree with you there that they do have their own tunnel vision, and that definitely does not help a team that's trying to, you know, connect and get it on offense.
Move on. Second, when they come back in the second half, they come back again from 15 down. This is partially in the third quarter, where LeBron had 0 points in the third quarter and comes back. Fourth quarter, it gets to 115-10. They have a little bad offensive moment. JR hits a free throw with 3:17 to go. That was their first point in 3:30. And then LeBron, 2:40 to go. Their closest they get in this game. He gets a rebound. He gets to the line in there by pushing. They get within one. Gets him his triple-double as well. Then the Nuggets, 227, Millsap 3. JR misses two threes when he just looked exhausted on the next possession. Then Gary Harris 3. Hill has the turnover. Chandler Dunn gets him up 9, effectively ends the game. But when the Cavs did get back into it, what did you guys think was the reason that happened? Like, what did you feel like, aside from JR doing JR things, what do you feel like propelled that? Was it defense? Was it just the Nuggets going back to the mean from their shooting a little bit?
What was it? I think that the Nuggets had heavy legs. I mean, the Cavs had heavy legs, but the Nuggets were on the second night of a back-to-back. They had just come off of a 108-102 win at Memphis. So I think at the end there that the fatigue was settling in there. I mean, Will Barton, I think, tried 5 straight shots on 5 straight possessions. You know, sometimes they get a little, when things aren't going right for them. So I think a little bit of Denver doing that. But I also think that, you know, the Cavs, they were pushing it well. And I think that when they're playing in transition, they're at their best.
Ashley, what about you?
Yeah, I mean, I kind of sort of have the same mindset, right? When you've been shooting so well a whole game, you can go cold collectively, and I think that did kind of happen. I think maybe the Cavs did iron out some things and finally figured out a strategy that was maybe working for a little bit, and knowing that they were hitting these outside shots and maybe stop worrying about the interior so much. But then the other side of that is that the Cavs also went cold, so you know, you kind of have to put it all together still, and they just haven't been able to do that, where keep that, you know, sort of offensive firepower that they came into the second half with. They could not maintain it down the stretch.
Going back to Hood or Korver for a little bit in the fourth, I think would have been a good move to just get some fresh legs out there. I know why Ty does what he does there, but I think going back to one of them would have made a lot of sense.
Yeah.
Speaking of Korver, though, what happened to him?
It's a bad night, I think. He's on the fringe of the rotation either way, and that's going to be an issue for him.
We talked about that, too, a couple weeks ago.
Yeah. It's going to be interesting to see if he's in the playoff rotation playing more than this. Mm-hmm. Two last things we'll get up here. Number one, on a negative note, Jeff Green is going to miss at least two games with a lower back issue. Had a MRI, no structural damage on that lower back, but it's going to leave the Cavs with the guy who is sort of their closest version of being able to give another bigger forward with LeBron so they go small. But do you guys think they really are going to miss Jeff Green? Like, I'm kind of just like, it's whatever. It's
fine. Yeah, I'm kind of in the same boat there.
Yeah, I think Larry kind of does some of the things that, you know, you look for Jeff to do a lot as far as pushing the ball and, you know, doing that sort of stuff that you can maybe rely for Jeff on. But, you know, you kind of look at his offensive numbers, 10.3 points and 3.3 rebounds.
Teams ignore him when he goes to he's not shooter.
Yeah. You don't need him to spot up.
And he doesn't create for other people. So that's, you know.
And he's talked about how his role, and he's talked about how his role has changed since they got all these new guys, and he hasn't been as comfortable, and I think that's obvious. Mm-hmm. On the positive note, Richard Jefferson came back. he made a cameo in 15 minutes, defended LeBron, which is, it's kind of surprising that they went to him there. He got a big ovation from the Q. Seemed very happy to see all his former teammates. Made a cameo in the Cavs locker room after the game and talking to LeBron before LeBron started his media availability.
Yeah, that was freaking hilarious.
Was it, how cool is it, honestly, to just have RJ? Like, he's just such a fun personality.
Yeah.
And you could see how much the crowd really was receptive to him.
Yeah.
What did you guys think of RJ just being like, what was your favorite RJ return moment?
It was definitely him in the locker room. So, obviously, you guys are not privy to what goes on, everything that goes on in the Cavs locker room. We were all waiting, huddled around LeBron's locker like everyone does because it is the hot ticket in the post game. And all of a sudden, RJ, getting...
Pops out of the Cavs training room.
Pops out of the Cavs training room fully dressed and starts ripping LeBron. You know, they're talking about hanging out and whether they're going to hang out, you know, tonight, whether they're going to hang out when the Cavs are in Denver next week. And, you know, it's just, it's great to see. I mean, all the stuff that we saw from RJ tonight is why I miss RJ. And it's, you know, we were talking before the game how, you know, there was this change in RJ after the 2016 season and whether it's age catching up to him, whatever it is. But the reason this team misses RJ and why fans miss RJ is because of all of the intangibles. I think you, in all his good moments tonight, that's what you saw again.
Yeah, you miss RJ because of the fun, but you also miss him as a locker room presence. You know, guys like
Tyloo was asked about this too. Like, do they miss James Jones, RJ, and Channing Frye? These three core locker room guys who are no longer with the team for obvious different reasons.
All veterans that could give out advice. All guys that were healthy. You know, it really created a very good environment for all the guys.
Yeah.
So that's somewhere they definitely are missing him. My moment of the night for RJ was when he took Kyle Korver on a one-on-one drive, got him on an okey-doke move and had a nice little layup. He talked about before the game that he doesn't think that the Cavs have those guys there anymore. You know, the guys like him and Channing and JJ, you know, to help them get along. And that was something that he thought they didn't address well over the offseason once they lost all those guys.
I do really think you can't just eat up roster spots with guys, but looking back, it probably doesn't matter because this team's probably not winning a title anyway, and I don't think Richard Jefferson and
was gonna make
like
that
yeah
difference.
Like he's not gonna especially at this point. But I wonder if just like the in terms of building chemistry, if maybe having RJ around with Channing instead of Derrick Rose.
Yeah.
Like bringing in Wade is one thing, and I understand like how that made people uncomfortable, made JR uncomfortable. It seemed like LeBron was one of the few people that wanted it.
I mean, LeBron said that himself.
Yeah, like
LeBron acknowledged.
Yeah, and like so we know that. But what if having RJ around instead of a point guard who didn't play well, who is no longer with the team, who was away from the team for a month? I just wonder if that calculus was wrong there.
Well, hindsight's also
20. Oh, 100% 2020. You know? I was also in the Derrick Rose is bad. I was on the record that Derrick Rose is bad in 2017-18. But it's cool to have RJ back. I wish he would, just in terms of sheer nuts, I would have loved to see him pull out a vintage dunk.
Yeah.
And I'm kind of mad they didn't play like some of his Cavs. I know why. The tribute videos are overplayed.
He's two before tonight.
Yeah, this guy, he doesn't play.
I said, I looked at Chris, I'm like, is RJ going to play 15 minutes just to troll all of us?
Yeah,
like,
and he played exactly 15 minutes.
I called it when he had been playing for 10. But, you know, I mean, I said when the trade happened that the trade that most upset me was Channing, and I get why you had to give him up, but I think fans too were sort of seeing that when Channing was utilized, he was doing things correctly.
And very rarely he was utilized.
Yeah, and I barely, you know, very rarely do I have issues like to the point that I did Channing not playing and not playing, you know, not playing as often as he wasn't playing, because you see him come in and he is successful. And yeah, I get he's older, whatever. He's towards, you know, far closer to the end of his career than the beginning of it. But he was still effective, not just as a locker room presence. He was effective on the floor.
Yeah, the floor spacing was yes. huge when he was around.
And yep. the duo with him and Korver was, you know, I think it's something that Korver's missing now. And it's led to some of his up and down.
Yeah, I don't think he benefits necessarily. There's not as much structure with some of those second units. They're still learning all these plays.
Yeah.
Clarkson's not a point guard who looks for other guys all the time. So, and I think that hurts Korver as well. But the Cavs in this game, 126 to 117 losers. Denver comes in. The Cavs now lost two straight, one to Philly, one to Denver, two teams that are in the playoffs in their respective conferences, but I think games the Cavs would have obviously liked to win. They're back at home Monday against the Detroit Pistons, against another East playoff team, or a team right in the battle for Eastern Conference.
Very long West Coast road trip.
Which is going to be brutal for them, include stops in Denver, Los Angeles twice, Portland, Phoenix, so a lot of tough games and playing one very obviously tanking team in the Phoenix Suns.
But, I was going to say, very, very tough games against Phoenix Suns.
Yeah, the Phoenix Suns.
But we know how the Cavs struggle against teams that are obviously tanking.
And they have a good offense.
The Cavs have a weekend in L.A. where they can probably hang out with Channing Frye. I'm just saying.
True. Yeah. Might help them turn things around.
If TMZ catches LeBron and Lonzo hanging out in L.A., it's over.
Get ready for Twitter to explode.
One thing that we do know about these Cavs, though, is that they do thrive on chaos. So,
what
we're expecting probably won't happen.
But does this group, is the case test for that?
Because of the core pieces, the core four, I still think so. But we'll see. I'm not as down on the road trip as a lot of people are.
I think it'll reveal a lot. And I think for better, I think that's just the value. And maybe Kevin Love will pop up as well, because he keeps seeming like he wants to play, even though they're saying no.
Getting close. And that's what a lot of people are forgetting, that there's a Kevin Love missing.
The team's second best player, the most dapper player on the team, is not there. Yeah, by far. That Banana Republic.
That Banana Republic endorsement does wonders for...
Yeah.
You know, the fashion.
Guys
sense.
Got fashion. But that's going to be it for today's show. You can find Ashley on Twitter at AshleyBastock42. Find Spencer on Twitter at SpinDavies. Again, apologies for the noise. I don't know why they're tearing down everything today. I don't know if there's a hockey game coming
probably
up.
Probably something going
yeah,
on.
Yeah, but the queue is getting ripped down as we hear. So if you hear all that noise, it sounds like we're like on a construction site. That's why. But if you want to support the podcast, 5-star rating interview on iTunes is always appreciated. Find me on Twitter and Facebook at CWMWrites. The podcast on Twitter and Facebook at Locked On Cavs. And we'll be back Monday after Cavs Pistons and have a preview of Cavs Pistons up on Monday as well. But I'm Chris Manning. This has been Locked On Cavs. And on the way out, you'll hear J.R. Smith's postgame audio on the way out. And we'll talk to you on Monday.
Hey, guys, go ahead.
Pretty stark difference between the two halves for you, J.R. What changed?
Got better looks. Just trying to be aggressive. First half, came off two dribble handoffs, got one kick ball, one time to double myself. I really didn't see much opportunity. In the second half, I just figured, the hell with it, just be more aggressive. If they double me, try and get around them. If they make a play, but it's just different mindsets, I guess.
Did you know in the moment you didn't get a shot in the first half?
Yeah, I'm pretty good with my shots. So I know when I shoot and know when I don't.
Tyson, he called some stuff for you coming out of halftime. How much did that help? And if that didn't happen as much as it used to happen?
It helped. Definitely. I started getting it going a little bit, so it definitely helped. And I just try to do what I can with the opportunities I do get. And the ones I don't, just try to do a better job on defense.
What do you think happened to the defense tonight, especially on three
quarters? We started off a little too lax. They pretty much got any shot they wanted without a contest. We're much better when we don't go under. We're more aggressive when there's double teaming or going over the top of screens. that's just the team we are. When we go under, the guys get downhill on the bigs, kick out the threes. And that's, I mean, that's what they're good at. You know, we didn't make them work enough on the other. Ron is a pretty good post-up player as well. We got, you know, guys like Wilson and other wings in this league guarding him. We got to use that advantage in the post a little bit too, not just on the pick and rolls and outside the three.
LeBron was mentioning not being able to get stops late in the game tonight. It was the same kind of thing against Philadelphia. I know you didn't play in that game and you didn't watch that game, but what is it that you think is preventing you guys from getting those stops late when in the past maybe you've been able to?
Oh, just the mentality, I think. And also, we got new guys in. I mean, Rodney, Chetty Stills, I mean, he's a younger guy, Larry. We have guys in those positions who, you know, typically haven't been in those positions in our system. And that's no knock to them. It's just that they're second-guessing themselves a little bit. And, I mean, that's just human nature. You're going to do that when you haven't been in the same environment for too long. So once they've been here long enough, they start to get it.
Anything else, guys?
I feel like the last 48 hours are completely behind you.
Say again?
You feel like the last 48 hours are completely behind you?
Yeah, absolutely.
Which hit me?
All right, bro. Just do what I do, you know. Just come in and work, go home, play with my kids, play 2K. That's about it, you know. I can't really dwell on the past. I've never been that person, so I just look forward to the next day and trying to be better every day.